You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm Tina Spindler, a UC Master Gardener and the host of today's program. I'm very excited today to be at SWA Group. They are landscape architects, planners, and urban design folks who are currently doing a lot of work on the Gray Park in Irvine. And one of the components of the plan that they're working on, I'm very excited about because it's the Gray Park Botanical Garden. So, Sean, thanks so much for being with us today. And to start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your firm?
Sure. I'm Sean O'Malley. I'm the managing principal here in our Laguna Beach office of SWA. You know, I've been around plants probably my whole life, almost my whole life, not from the very beginning, but since I was a very young age, I was kind of attracted to the, you know, to the yard and the landscape. And, you know, I grew up in San Bernardino, so those mountains were always right there in front of me and very much inspired my love of nature and wanting to get out there in those mountains and those deserts that are so beautiful here in Southern California.
Wow, that's so fun. Did you have a family garden when you were growing up?
Yes. Yeah, I of course, managed that family garden. I grew all kinds of vegetables, or tried to. It's pretty warm out there, as you can imagine. You know, we benefit from pretty good soils, so that was working in my favor out in there. But, yeah, it's something that I really enjoyed and was inspired very much by. Also, I had an older brother who, when I was probably about 8 years old, made me mow the grass. And, you know, soon I was doing that every day, kind of like Forrest Gump, you know, move back and forth. Just got into it. And soon I was mowing the grass for the entire neighborhood.
Wow. You know, and I hope they were paying you.
Oh, yeah. Good beer money when I was in high school, you know. That's how I kind of got into this.
And so is that what made you pursue an education in landscape architecture?
Yes, at Cal Poly Pomona. Uh-huh. And I was fortunate to have some excellent instructors there from Bob Perry, who really inspired me in my love of native California plants, who, by the way, is a member of our design team for the Great Park.
Oh, wow. He's the authority on native plants.
Absolutely.
We all have books from him.
Yeah. Bob was great and very inspirational. Very inspirational.
Great. And then you went to grad school as well in urban planning. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I started at SWA in 1988. So, you know, we've been around for quite a long time, since 1957. And I think we're now the largest landscape architecture firm in the United States, with 8 offices, both here and 1 overseas. So I've been here for quite a while, but which is pretty normal for our organization because we're an employee-owned company. One of the first 4 in the United States. It's kind of an experiment, and it's worked out quite well, I think, because we're all fully invested in what
sure.
we do, you know, top to bottom.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so I went back to school maybe 7 years after I started here. I started to get interested in larger scale projects and, you know, the design of the town and the communities that we live in. And here in Laguna Beach, we were established to really design those towns and communities for Irvine. We did all the initial planning for those first communities, and we still to this day are working on one right now.
That's awesome.
In Irvine. So most of the city there is really, we have our hand in.
Well, as a 40-year resident of Irvine, I thank you for that, because I have lived in one of those communities, several of them.
We've been fortunate to have a fantastic client and city to work with. So, yeah.
That's great. Well, speaking of large projects, the one we're here to talk about today is the Gray Park and the Gray Park Framework Plan, of which the Botanical Garden will be a component. So can you tell us a little bit about the Gray Park Framework Plan before we jump into
sure.
my favorite piece of it?
You know, before you start a project of this scale and magnitude, I think it's important to learn from other projects of similar size and scale. And so one of the first things that we did was look back at the other great parks around the world and how did they develop, how did they mature, over time. And all of them had one common element to them, which was this idea of a framework or, you know, an armature from which they can grow and evolve with the community along with that community. For example, Golden Gate Park, you know, was originally planted as a eucalyptus forest to help stabilize the sand dunes there. There was no city around it, you know, at the time. What over time, those, you know, that forest was established, and then it's taken away to incorporate the program as the community develops alongside of it, and those needs change and evolve. And so that was a good lesson for us in how to approach our great park here. The forest itself in shade, as we know, is extremely important in today's ever-changing climate, and all the other benefits of the forest brings in terms of wildlife, the ecological aspects and so forth, educational aspects, and also the idea of that forest celebrating where we live. I mean, Irvine is a melting pot, right, of cultures and peoples, and I think that's our strength. And likewise, Southern California is a melting pot of landscape, right? It's our strength, but also we need to remember who we are, and that's where I think the idea of the native California landscape comes into play. It's also an important element of the Great Park, and it will be as well. So that framework is the forest. It ties everything together, and within that forest we have a series of programs and activities per the community from their feedback that we insert into those areas.
That's great. Can you tell me, for our listeners, I've seen some of the framework drawings, but I think folks who are listening today may not have seen it. So can you describe what the components of this framework plan are, its general size, and the steps that we can expect to see over the next few years?
So overall, Great Park Irvine is 1,200 acres, including the existing sports park. I think that puts it up there as one of, if not the largest, metropolitan park in the United States of America. So we have quite a responsibility together as a community upon our shoulders to make this happen and make it a wonderful place and incorporate all of these different kinds of programs that I mentioned before. First of all, the sports park, the existing sports park, will continue to evolve and be added to in some way. And we'll improve that with more shading and gathering spaces for the kids and the soccer teams that need a place under the trees before and after the games, right? Also a place to eat. We need food and beverage. So we are planning those elements as well in the sports park. Now we will jump over to down to the cultural terrace, which is in the southern end of the park, near the Metrolink station. That's a very important part because that's really also a place of education and learning. We foresee that area almost like a college campus, if you will, utilizing some of the existing hangars for museums, and then adding more buildings to create a kind of museum campus of learning and education that celebrates what happened here before, the important history, of course, of our site as the El Toro Marine Base, a flight museum, if you will. We actually have the planes being driven up at night on the 5 freeway from Miramar, where they were stored in a hangar that used to fly here at El Toro dating back to 1941, when it was first established, you know, for the war effort, all the way through, I think, the F-16 era. So quite a collection of airplanes and helicopters that we'll be displaying there, as well as pretend city for kids, a place to explore and learn about you know, the community within within the building itself. OCMD, which is the Orange County Music and Dance Museum, celebrating the arts. And now Asia-Pacific Museum, which would be a very important element for the city of Irvine. So that's the cultural terrace. Now we'll move a little bit north to the center of the park, what I refer to as the heart of the park. The heart of the park is anchored by a 22-acre lake. We'll be using recycled water. As you may know, the city of Irvine is one of the largest in the world at producing recycled water. In fact, it has an abundance of it and sells it off to neighboring communities, neighboring cities. So we will be using that water to create this important amenity feature at the heart of the park. And around that lake, we'll have a series of gathering spaces, plazas, overlook areas, picnic shaded areas, meadows, so forth, to take advantage of those views. the Great Meadow directly adjacent, which, you know, every great park needs a great meadow. You all been to Central Park in New York City. How fantastic is that, right?
And they have great music events in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you need these unprogrammed spaces. I think that's super important. That can be flexible. Just a big lawn surrounded by the trees and play areas for kids and so forth. The treetop walk. And then adjacent to the Great Meadow, we'll have our amphitheater. And the amphitheater will be a 10,000-seater. We're currently working on that right now with a fantastic architectural firm who actually designed the Sphere in Vegas. So they're specialists, one of the best stadium designers in the world that we have here on our team for the Great Park. And then as we move north, we have the Botanic Garden, our subject today.
My favorite part.
Your favorite part. And the Veterans Memorial, also extremely important as well to honor those who served here at the Great Park over the many decades that it is of a fantastic service to the country. We also have what we call the Arboretum, which is really would be a piece of the Botanic Garden, and the existing Bosque, which is a linear park in the northwest part of the park, connecting into the adjacent neighborhoods. We'll be improving that area as well with more trees and shading and gathering spaces. Lastly but not least, the Farm Hub, which is really a place to learn about agriculture. We're setting aside many, many acres for that particular program element, where we can buy produce grown on the site and have a nice meal in the evening and really take part in the wonderful other history of our site, which is agriculture, right?
Yes, it was part of the Irvine Ranch.
Yeah, right, exactly. Before it was a marine base, it was agriculture. So we shouldn't forget that. And before it was agriculture, of course, it was an incredible grassland savanna where the Native Americans used to, of course, take part and live in this wonderful landscape of Southern California that we have today. This is a great park with a great program.
How many acres is this the framework plan covering? You said the whole park was 1,200 acres, and I know that existing sports park is several hundred acres.
200 acres? Yeah, so we're talking about 1,000 acres of new development.
Wow, exactly. that's a huge project.
Absolutely. But not unlike other projects that I've worked on here and around the world, very similar in terms of scale, some even much larger. So I think SWA has been fortunate to be involved in these larger projects, so we kind of know how to do them.
That's awesome. Yeah. So the first section that's being worked on now, what can the public expect to see in the nearest term?
The nearest term, the phase one part of the park would be the cultural terrace and the heart of the park. And that would include also the amphitheater. So, and then immediately following would be the Botanic Garden and the Veterans Memorial. That's right.
Wonderful. Yeah. I think that the park is amazing today in that it is a great resource for the community. I think all of our kids ended up needing to go to sports tournaments and the facilities at the Great Park.
Including
you. And the facilities at the Great Park are amazing. I wish they'd had them when my kids were going through that stage. Yeah. But I think we're all really excited to see it expand beyond the sports uses to other uses that will appeal to, section of
we have data that show some of these sports teams come in from Ohio, Indiana, Hawaii. So the Great Park is a draw for the country, particularly the sports part of it now. We hope that the rest of it will be as well.
I think it will, for sure.
Yeah. I think it helps that it's on the Metrolink line to be connected both to San Diego and Los Angeles, in the immediate vicinities. I think it's definitely a treasure that we should nurture and grow in the best way that we can.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay, now let's narrow our focus a bit down to the Botanical Garden, which is my favorite. I first met you, a year and a half, 2 years ago when we were talking about the Botanic Garden, because another opportunity that I'm involved in is a nonprofit that supports the creation of the Botanic Garden, right. the Great Park Garden Coalition. And that nonprofit was formed, as you know, about 7 years ago or so. So we had spent a number of years visiting gardens and gathering information. And you guys were kind enough to invite us to share what we had discovered. And we had worked with your alma mater with 93 students at Cal Poly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, which was the best experience. right as COVID was starting, these poor young people had to design a botanical garden for their capstone project in the midst of COVID. So God bless them. They did it and came up with, I think, 30 different wonderful designs. But the design you've come up with, of course, is phenomenal. And so let's just talk, first of all, about what the size of this botanical garden is and what will be built in the first phase versus future phases, just to give folks kind of a sense of what we're talking about here.
Right, right. So maybe take a step back. You know, botanic gardens have a long history, you know, both in this country and around the world with Kew Gardens in London and so forth, and Huntington here and locally in Los Angeles, San Marino, I'm sorry. And what's interesting is a lot of these botanic gardens first got their start from private investment, right, from families, basically, who were had this passion to really celebrate, you know, the beauty of plant material, but also advance the science. So I think the first and foremost role of botanic garden, you know, at its foundation was science, right, was the study of plant material, its evolution, how we can learn from that, and also hybridize and so forth, and exploration, experimentation. But now botanic gardens have evolved also to incorporate the experience, right? So, or the art of the botanic garden. I go to Huntington to see the incredible, the Chinese garden, just unbelievable, right? Or the floral display of the Rose Garden, etc. And there's science all behind both of those gardens, of course, absolutely, and especially at Huntington, where they're remarkable leaders in that respect. People like to be entertained. So as a landscape architect, we kind of straddle that middle ground between that entertainment and the science in all respects, and of course the community's needs and so forth, and trying to bring those together and solve problems, make it do both. And so that's our challenge. How can we accomplish both at the same time? And that our botanic garden hopefully will do so. Number one, at its core, at its framework, is what I call the California Arroyo. That's the foundation of my passion, is our native plant community. So to celebrate that community and to educate folks as they walk along the central spine of this arroyo, where we can, show some of those native species that we're all familiar with. And I was very much inspired by the California Botanic Garden, which is formerly the Rancho Santa Ana Botanic Garden in Claremont, where we had some of our classes at Cal Poly with Bob Perry. My gosh, when you smell the ceanothus, wow. It's one of my favorite. and the buzzing of the bees and so forth. You know, and these gardens are alive. Look at where we live. Wow. So that's our spine, our central spine for the botanic garden is the California
Arroyo. And just to explain to folks who may be listening who aren't familiar with the term arroyo, what does that mean in our geography and in our environment?
It's a creek. It's a dry creek bed normally because it's, they're mainly dry. And, of course, they carry water when it's raining. But they're an essential lifelines both for wildlife and for the Native Americans who used to live here where inhabit the edges of that arroyo because a lot of the food sources were there, both the oak woodlands, of the acorns, so forth, and the wildlife at the same time. And so along that arroyo, then we have our series of botanic gardens, which are these, in phase one, we will build a children's garden, which is at the same time about exploration and learning about this native landscape and having fun. And the tactile experience of being a child is really important, and understand how we can engage them. For example, we have an idea for what I call Cetacean Square, which is a splash play, a very large splash plaza you know, which we've done a lot of those both here and around the world with fountains. But in the fountains, you have the Serengeti of the Pacific. You know, that channel between us and Catalina Island is regarded as the richest area of mammal life in the world.
Both, I did not know that.
With super, you know, the superpods of dolphin and of course, the blue whales and gray whales and all kinds of whales imaginable, including orcas recently. So we hope to display some of those animals in the splash pad so kids can climb on them. And right now we're designing a life-size blue whale to be in that plaza. So we can say, wow, this is amazing. there'll be nothing like it in our country, I think, here. And we will have it hopefully here in Irvine. And then behind that, we, you know, creating some hills, you know, to really, to, I guess, be inspired by the Cleveland National Forest. And along those hills, we'll have slides for the kids, you know, going to the oak woodland and so forth. Then at the base of those hills, perhaps a, what we call the ranch, which is a small little agricultural place and a home, you know, a kind of a playhouse for kids to kind of understand, you know, learn about the importance of agriculture as, you know, as part of our history as well. So yeah, it's a playground, but it's also a place of learning and exploration. It's a children's garden.
It sounds amazing. I envision it because through Master Gardeners, I work a lot with schools, creating, helping them to create school gardens.
Yeah, okay.
And I envision it as a field trip place.
Absolutely.
I also have volunteered as Master Gardener as a docent at Centennial Farm.
Yeah.
You know, at the fairgrounds, and. It's amazing to me when you see these kids coming with their parents or parent chaperones and their teachers, how little they've been exposed to growing things, or in the case of Centennial Farm, growing things and animals.
Yeah.
And I don't think the kids, even the older kids, really have an appreciation of the California geography that you're highlighting, you know, here in this children's garden, or the California history. You know,
right.
That you're highlighting.
Yeah.
So I don't know when the field trip consultations will begin with the school districts, but I'm really, really excited to hear that this will be that sort of environment.
Yeah, so important. And then I want to highlight two other gardens as part of phase one of the Botanic Gardens. And the first one being the Celebration Garden, you know, which celebrates our climate. And the incredible floral displays that we can attain here in Southern California, particularly in Irvine, the Mediterranean climate that we have, that we're blessed with. So, you know, we're all familiar with the Rose Garden at Huntington. So there'll be a little bit of that, but also some of the other flowering materials, the sages and the lavenders and so forth that we can really, we're so fortunate to grow, you know, in Orange County. Every botanic garden needs a revenue source. So, you know, we envision what we call the Celebration Garden as, you know, fulfilling that role, not only as a wonderful place to come in the spring and the summer, but, you know, to host weddings and all the other kinds of celebrations that can help the botanic gardens grow and thrive into the future, right? Okay. And then the other garden I want to highlight, what was it called? Walk Through the World. Which again celebrates the climate that we live in, and learning from the different plant ecologies around some of the plant ecologies from around the world.
What would those include? Do you anticipate?
Number one, a Mediterranean garden, I think, that not only highlights what we have here in Southern California, but perhaps Italy and Southern France, the olives and so forth, and then perhaps a tropical garden, which. Grows, you know, really well in our soils here, by the way, and also what we call the savanna of some portions of Africa, for example, that we can highlight some of the exotic species that we can grow here, also in Orange County. So, but they all have something in common: is that, you know, plants work together usually, right? They're not individuals. They're like families. Some get along, some don't. Some fight for water, you know, so forth. But I think there's something to learn from all of these different ecologies that we can bring home.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what gardens did you visit? Or I'm sure you've visited an incredible number of gardens, but what are the ones that you would say gave you a lot of takeaways that you're using in this garden?
Number one, I mentioned the California Botanic Garden in Claremont, the largest native plant garden in California. A must-see, I think, for any of your listeners. Number two, the Santa Barbara Botanic Garden. Also, it's smaller, but has, I think, one of the most interesting California meadows I've seen, most successful, you know, the native grasses. And then, of course, Huntington Gardens, I mentioned, because of its wide variety, kind of a walk through the world, if you will, of plants, you know, collections from all over different continents, and the science of the Huntington Gardens as well. Bouchard Gardens.
One of my favorites. We don't have that climate, but boy, is that spectacular.
Yeah, in terms of floral display, absolutely. So I take advantage of their, you know, where they're located on the planet and their rainfall, obviously.
For folks who don't know, Bouchard Gardens is in Victoria, Canada, and is stunning from a floral display, as you said.
And I can't forget San Diego Botanic Garden, a fantastic garden that, obviously is very similar in climate to where we are here in Irvine. So a lot to learn from San Diego Botanic Garden.
Yeah, very, very similar. Yeah. What sort of will there be structures in the botanic garden for activities or events or classrooms that sort of thing?
Absolutely. You know, I mentioned the children's garden. We envision kind of a learning pavilion. That would be a covered structure, open air, but kind of a classroom-like facility. As well as I mentioned the celebration garden. We also, of course, pavilions and an event barn. For large gatherings.
When you say an event barn, is that a kitchen and seating? How does that?
All the above.
All the above. Okay.
What you just mentioned. Yes, it'll have a kitchen, it'll have seating, it'll have a large, you know, space that opens up to the gardens themselves, overlooks the gardens. Basically a very large barn, you know, open floor, flexible space, you know. So.
Boy, I envision this wedding venue piece of the garden being booked solid for years.
Yeah. So and last but not least, we have an existing and very interesting piece of history out there on our site right now. It's the old control tower and flight operations building for El Toro Marine Base. We are saving that structure, and we will repurpose it. There's been a lot of ideas still on the table, so we're not exactly sure what purpose that would be, but that would definitely include a gift shop, a cafe overlooking the botanic gardens, what we call a discovery center that touches on a little bit of the history of the site, and perhaps offices, you know, for the botanic gardens, and the upper floor, because it's a two-floor building, the upper floor has the opportunity, incredible views of botanic gardens, so again, perhaps another rentable, you know, event space to help raise revenue. So that flight operations building is a key component of the Botanic Gardens. It straddles it just on the northern edge, and it also anchors what we call the Botanic Terrace, which is the entry plaza. You can imagine going to Huntington Gardens and their entry plaza area, very similar in size and scale, perhaps even a little bit larger than you see in Huntington Gardens.
Wow, sounds amazing. I need to take just a quick break to let everyone know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. So back to our botanic, soon-to-be botanic garden.
Right.
But I'd like to hear a little bit more about the botanic gardens that inspired you in terms of what you think they did for the public in terms of were there programs, were there feelings that you had, you know, as you walked through these gardens, and how do you want to see those replicated or modeled in the Great Park Botanic Garden?
Exactly. You know, when you walk through a garden, I think one of the most fascinating parts of any garden is its structure in terms of the play of light and shadow on the space. You know, from seeing a very large grassy meadow, for example, you know, surrounded by the forest, and then walking, you know, fully in the sun, and then walking through the forest in the dappled shade under the trees. One of my favorite moments is laying down in the yard and just looking up through the leaves, you know, and seeing the light coming through those branches, right? And the bees buzzing and so forth, and the birds. So we hope to, that's the first and foremost experience, I think. And then, of course, all the other, you know, the smells of that garden and the, that we can bring forth. And the quietness, I think, is another part of a garden, right? It's a place of rejuvenation. We're all familiar with the science behind, you know, forest cleansing and different cultures that it's part of their life, right? Going into the forest, right?
Forest bathing,
that's exactly correct.
In Japan,
yeah.
That was a big thing when I went there.
I try and do a little bit of that every weekend, by the way. So just the general experience of nature, that's the first and foremost experience. And then within that experience of nature, then all those other kinds of educational opportunities that we have about what you're looking at, you know. I was really inspired by, for example, how plants were used by the Native Americans here in California for subsistence, right? How these different, I mentioned the different plants, the communities, how they kind of depend on each other for survival sometimes and working together, right? The native strawberry growing beneath the shade of the oak, for example, right? I mentioned about these opportunities for gathering spaces and just places of rest and relaxation.
So the gathering places for rest and relaxation, do those take the form of just traditional benches? What sort of form does that take, and how are they experienced throughout the garden?
All kinds of forms.
Okay, cool.
Well, number one, I think there'd be we have to come up with a design for we're working right now on furniture for the Bay Park. And all these different districts, from the Botanic Garden to the Cultural Terrace to the Heart of the Park, etc., Sports Park, might even have their own language or vocabulary of furniture, right? Botanic Garden being one of them. And so there'd be within that hierarchy of, you know, benches in the Botanic Garden, of course, we have perhaps more of a standard kind of a bench that's comfortable, you know, to sit on and so forth under the shade of the oak trees. But then also, I think we should think about ways to bring artists into the equation. And they can help us design some of these benches and places to relax.
And with your office located in Laguna Beach, you have access to a very vibrant art community. So that should...
And we have one of those artists even here with our staff. And she's she'll be having a display, you know, a booth at both the Sawdust and the Festival of the Arts. So, we're lucky to be in Laguna Beach and really hopefully bring that talent and skill into bear into the Bay Park.
Well, one of the pieces that I'm really fascinated with all of them, but I love that the spine of the park is an arroyo. Because I grew up camping out in the San Bernardino area in the desert and the mountains out there as a kid. And so I had the benefit of exploring many of an arroyo, you know, as a kid. And I think that that was such an amazing experience because although the children's garden will be, I'm sure, a huge hit, I think that the arroyo, if it's I assume it's not fenced off. I assume you can kind of wander through it.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that will be an amazing experience for kids and adults alike. Instead of just, you know, we're so used to walking on pavement.
Right.
And just looking at things quickly.
Yeah.
So the concept of the arroyo to me, you know, to be able to stroll through that, you know, step over some rocks, discover... odd little plants that you're not, you know, used to seeing in typical landscapes.
Perhaps there's a little pool with tadpoles in it. You know?
Oh, that would be. I know my toddler grandsons would love that.
Having grown up in that area, I spent a lot of my time, you know, walking along the beautiful white cobbled granite of our mountain regions and Santa Ana River, for example, and even fishing in some of those places. So, yeah. It's an incredible environment all to in itself. You know, when you're in Arroyo, one of my memories is the smell of the trees in there, you know, the alders that have this distinct, it smells, you know, smells like water to me, right? The shade that they invoke and the sound of the water moving through. Now, this is a functional arroyo, so it'll be dry most of the time, but it's carrying water from the botanic garden runoff to Agua Chanon. And, you know, we hope to use the arroyo as kind of a filtration device, as it should be, for that runoff area. So it's also, it's a working arroyo. It's a functional, you know, beyond just a beautiful place to walk along the edge.
You mentioned Agua Chanon. Can you explain where that is in the park and what it does?
It's on the west side of the park. It's an existing open space wildlife corridor that was set aside. It's quite expansive. I mean, I don't know the exact width, but it's many football fields wide. Unfortunately, we can't go into it, but it's an incredible resource to connect to and, you know, to be next to. I think we'll definitely have trails along the edges of Agua Chanon that connect into the park. Yeah, but it's all been landscaped with native California material, of course.
Is that meant to be a wildlife corridor?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah,
and so does it connect from the Santa Ana Mountains to the Laguna Canyon Wilderness?
I don't know if it goes all the way to Laguna Canyon Wilderness at this point, but it does have some connectivity up to the Cleveland National Forest in a limited kind of a fashion right now. But there are, you know, they find animals, you know, coyote and so forth that inhabit Agua Chanon, which are, by the way, an important part of our wildlife ecology at the Great Park. So as part of our research, I've been working with the San Diego Wildlife Alliance from the zoo and some of their scientists down there, and how we can best, you know, ensure the health of the bird species in the forest, for example. And different kinds of animals eat bird eggs, and coyotes eat those animals. So if you want to have a healthy, you know, bird population, you actually need the coyotes every now and then to do what they do, right? So. But, you know, we should be able to live with them. Right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I assume also because of all of the native plants that will be used in this botanic garden, there should be a pretty vibrant bird and butterfly population.
Absolutely. That's an important part of our approach. And we're currently also, it was pointed out to us, you know, the bee population is extremely important, and what we can do at the Great Park to bring that along, and not only, of course, in the farm itself and some of those plant materials, but the native gardens, botanic garden, I think, hopefully will help the bee population along, and whatever we can do in that regard. So we're currently working with one of the entomologists at the San Diego Zoo and how to incorporate that into our plans.
I know I read about the monarch butterflies being in trouble, and that there are different way stations that help in their migration from Mexico to other parts of California. Do you see this botanic garden as perhaps being one of those way stations?
Absolutely. Again, I'm not an expert on that, mm-hmm. So I know there are materials such as the milkweed, etc., and the right kind of milkweed that we have to plant to help that population, the butterfly population. But that's something that we should consider as a part of our approach moving forward.
Boy, I see so many programs for school field trip for kids, not just in the children's garden, but, you know, the whole arroyo experience for them to learn about in their social studies classes, if that's what they call them these days, when they're studying, you know, early California with the native peoples and what they used in order to survive in these lands. It just sounds like that would be an amazing educational experience as well.
Yeah, you know, the more we can bring this garden alive through education, it's past, it's present, and it's future. You know, what role do these gardens play in our future? Super important, right? And the idea of the forest as framework, critical to our to our cities, you know, around the world, right? Shading and so forth as we face climate change.
And I'm sure, because this is what landscape architects do, is they think about accessibility and the wide range of the folks who will be coming to visit this. And while I love the arroyo and the vision of children scrambling over the rocks, I assume that the design incorporates mobility challenged folks as well to have their own experience in this garden.
Absolutely. We have special components in our playground, for example, that accommodate accessibility and also, of course, along the trails themselves, so that there are places where they could be accessible to all ranges, you know, of ability.
What's your philosophy? I know when I go to botanical gardens, there seems to be kind of different philosophies about labeling plants versus not labeling plants. What do you envision in this garden? Do you have any thoughts on that?
That's an excellent question, and I think there should be places where they are labeled, and you know, obviously. And we can learn about, you know, how they work together and help us, you know, as we navigate our own futures. At the same time, you know, we want places where you just be inspired, just go, wow, by this landscape, you know, and kind of get away a little bit from all the hustle and bustle of our daily lives. So there should be areas where, you know, get a little bit free of the labeling, but we should, you know, for example, along the arroyo, there could be some intermittent labeling for those who are, you know, to help them understand what they're looking at. But there might be areas of more educational, you know, zones.
Yeah, I would love to see that, particularly as it relates to the native peoples, so that we can understand, you know, what plants were used to make whatever their shelters, their eating, you know, utensils, their gathering utensils. So I assume at some point we'll be working with the native population, original descendants of those people to incorporate that into the garden.
Yeah, you know, the weaving of baskets and so forth from some of the juncus species that we're aware of. Yeah, absolutely.
We've talked in detail about the first phase. About what size is that? The first phase of the garden.
The phase one would be about 20 acres. Yeah, the botanic garden. Phase two, another 20 acres. And then, of course, we have I mentioned the botanic terrace, which is an addition to that, kind of the entry plaza, and the flight operations building, which would be part of the garden as well.
And you also mentioned the arboretum, which I understand is on across the street from the main botanic garden property.
Across the street, across what's a cadence on the northern end of the park, but we'll be connected via an underground tunnel, well lit and safe.
Wow.
So bicycles can, you know, along a major bicycle route, you know, through the park, which is an important part of the park, by the way, of how we get around. I mean, so the park is 2 miles in each direction, east, west, and north, south. So we have to have an internal transit system. Right. So what is that system? Number one, pedestrian. Number two, bicycle. And number three, perhaps even a tram system that we're designing right now as well. So there might even be a fourth transit system that we're working on. I'm not sure I'm privy to you know, share that information, but it'll be really exciting.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we'll have to have a follow-up interview in a few months.
We're working on it right now, so it's not fully, you know, I'd rather have a workshop tomorrow here in the office, in fact, on that. So.
Wow. Mystery transportation.
Another innovation for the city of Irvine.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Because I, as a grandparent of toddlers, I am always concerned about how I'm going to get them, you know, from the parking lot where we go to venues to whatever it is we're looking at.
Exactly. There'll be some long distances here because it is a great park, by the way.
Right. Yeah. But I assume there are parking lots throughout the great park. So
yeah, our parking strategy, which is an unfortunate part of any, you know, a large park like this, is a dispersal kind of a strategy where obviously we have existing lots at the sports park, which serve the sports park. And our approach was that each district must be able to operate independently, almost basically park itself. One of the biggest challenges, of course, is our amphitheater, 10,000-seater. Large parking, you know, areas for that as well. But we have all the parking on the perimeter of the park, so that we want to keep that, you know, the park itself free of automobiles. We'll have a loop road that services all those parking areas that goes around the kind of towards the edges of the park. But within that loop road, pedestrian only.
Oh, that's great. The good thing I think about the amphitheater's activities are, will those mostly be in the evening as
yes,
the amphitheaters I've been
absolutely.
To?
Yeah. And we have some excellent sound attenuation, if what you're referring to, consultants.
Right.
And we'll be berming around that amphitheater. Some very large hills that surround the amphitheater. We're sinking it into the ground a bit. But, you know, the amphitheater is an important part of any great park. Like you mentioned, coming together on the Great Meadow for maybe performances. So we just implemented a temporary amphitheater. Your listeners might be aware of that, in the Sports Park area. I hope to go to a couple concert series there this summer.
I saw that just had its first one, I believe,
recently. Yeah, Pacific Symphony will be playing there.
That's great.
I'm very much inspired by our amphitheaters here in Southern California. You know, we have the Greek, we have the Hollywood Bowl. We used to have the Irvine Bowl. Irvine Meadows, I'm sorry.
Irvine Meadows,
Irvine
right.
Irvine Meadows. But what's the commonality, particularly the Hollywood Bowl and the Greek, is the idea of being in the forest, of the trees. And I think being surrounded by that forest is, to me, a very special, unique experience that we should bring into the Great Park at our amphitheater.
Absolutely.
So we are working on that right now, how to accomplish that idea, together with the berming for sound attenuation, etc., around the amphitheater.
Well, I think it sounds like it's going to be amazing, and what wouldn't interfere with one another? The Botanic Garden is typically used during the day, and not in the evenings.
But Botanic Gardens, as you know, are more the idea of seasonal celebration will be an important part of our program at the Botanic Garden. You know, we're all aware of the Descanso Gardens and the success that they, their evening light shows that they have. So why not plan for that at the Botanic Gardens, as we should? We anticipate the Botanic Gardens really being utilized, you know, into the evenings if possible.
That would be great. In California, why not?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
We can have them open all year long and into the evenings.
Absolutely.
And I especially like the seasonal celebrations. I know when I visit assorted botanic gardens, I always take a look at their calendar to see what they have going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Dallas Botanic Garden once when they were having their big fall pumpkin event, and it was just so much fun. It was like a fairy tale, you know, world made out of assorted fall decor, and the kids were having so much fun.
Right.
So I really look forward to that. And then, of course, I've heard that a lot of gardens actually have found these holiday events to be what keeps them in the black.
Right. A very important part of what we're planning to make sure we have all the infrastructure in place to make that happen. You know, the Botanic Garden will have its own parking areas. It'll share with the Veterans Memorial to the north, and, you know, very direct access from those parking areas into the garden itself. Well lit at night in the evenings. We have one of the best lighting consultants in the world working with us right now. And, you know, the light itself, there's a functional aspect to it, a safety aspect, of course, number one. Number two is also, you know, this aesthetic opportunity that we have to make it something really beautiful and flexible, so that we can add more light at certain times of the year, Christmas, holidays, whatever it might be, to make these dramatic kinds of experiences.
Oh, good point, because I imagine botanic gardens that had existed for a long time and are now trying to have these holiday light shows probably had to do a lot of retrofitting to get the appropriate electricity it needed to be.
We have the advantage of starting from scratch.
Yes.
Also the disadvantage. So, you know, we talk about a garden. How do we establish these plants, you know, as quickly as we can? Well, we will have trees of all sizes, number one. We'll have mature trees, and we'll have, you know, also immature or, you know, smaller plant materials, of course. But as you know, if you're a gardener, if you do the right soil prep, you can get these things to grow fast. And particularly in our climate, I think, relative, you know, everything's relative. We're blessed with a fantastic climate, and we'll do our best to make sure that we can establish this garden as quickly as we can.
Now, the site out there, as I look at it right now, is fairly flat because it was a Marine Base Air Station. So, of course, they needed flat for for the flights.
2%. 2%.
So, will as the lakes are dug and so on and so forth, will there end up being some more interesting kind of terrain in the botanic garden?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to have a lot of dirt that we need to put somewhere. Yeah, you know, the lake has to be a certain depth to maintain its health. And, you know, I mentioned the lake, and that's an interesting part of our, you know, of the great park. I think it itself would be very innovative in its approach because it's going to be an organically filtered lake. We're using wetlands. Wetland terrace on the edge of the lake that we'll be pumping water through to recirculate through those wetlands.
Interesting.
And then also, the lake itself is falling down 30 feet from top to bottom. So how do we do that? Well, we have to have waterfalls, obviously, right? So waterfalls help aerate the water and also, you know, improve its health.
And be fun for visitors to see. Everybody
exactly.
loves that sound.
Particularly in the evening.
Yeah.
We hope to uplight those waterfalls. So right now I have this idea of a series of these smaller waterfalls stepping down from the North Lake to the South Lake. The idea of ecology, I think, permeates throughout the Great Park.
That's very exciting. So I assume that the amphitheater and the lakes will be worked on concurrently since they're in this similar
yes.
area?
Yeah, because we need the dirt I mentioned before for the sand attenuation and burning around the amphitheater,
mm-hmm.
which will have a forest on top of. And then we'll take that dirt to create beautiful mounding around the edge of the lake. So we have overlook picnic areas.
Oh, how nice.
And even perhaps even another place for ceremonies to occur. Another, you know, venue opportunity for the city of Irvine. and it'll be incredible views looking across that lake towards the sunset. Wow. Coming from the north side down,
yeah.
you know, towards the southwest. You know, one of the things growing up that was both a pleasant and a kind of a scary moment when I was younger is this big grass hill that we would go roll down and jump off of at the city library in San Bernardino. And, you know, I grew up in a big family. I have six brothers.
So, oh, my goodness.
So whatever they did, I had to do. And even though I was a little younger. So they would jump off and run. And then I did the same, and I broke my arm. That said, I think every, you know, the idea of hills is really a fun thing for kids, and particularly a big grassy hill. And for the most part, they're good memories for me.
Absolutely. They can break their arms stepping off a curb, you know.
Yeah,
so.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But it's part of growing up.
It is.
It's okay. It's okay.
They're not playing with electronics if they're rolling down a grassy hill. So that's a good thing.
Right. So we will have a big grassy hill at our great park for these kids to hopefully have fun and not injure themselves.
Awesome.
But, so we have a lot of dirt to play with, particularly also in the botanic garden to create topography and you know, encourage the movement of water.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time, but I just I know that construction of big projects, the timelines move all of the time.
Yeah.
But what is an anticipated range of opening date for the amphitheater and lake area, and then what's the farther out opening date for the botanic garden?
Amphitheater and lake area, probably about 3 to 4 years. We're, you know, right in the middle of our construction drawings right now. There's a lot of back and forth and review, obviously, has to happen with all the incredibly talented team that's working at the City of Irvine and with us on for the great park. And then for the Botanic Gardens, probably 4 to 5 years, I hope, you know, subject to a lot of different outside forces, of course.
Right.
But we want to build this as fast as we can. You know.
And we want you to too.
So, you know, I want to thank the city of Irvine and you, Tina, for your leadership in making this happen, making this, you know, a reality. I mean, for me to be able to work on a great park is a dream of any landscape architect, and very few get that opportunity. So we have a tremendous responsibility to, you know. The other thing I want to say is I might be the, you know, the lead designer for the great park, but we're all designers for the great park, right? The entire community. I just hold the pen for you and, you know, try and put that on paper and make it, you know, make it real. So thank you for your support, and let's make this happen.
Yeah, and I want to thank you, because what I've seen is pretty amazing so far, and I'm really excited to see this come out of the ground. So thanks so much.
Thank you.